Aida Peary, and I'm interviewing Jacqueline Turner. It's May 6, 2022, and we are in the Street Sense Media office. Hey, Jackie, how you doing?
Pretty good. Good morning to you.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to ask you some questions. I need to know about your childhood and early life in school, and when were you born? When were you born?
Well, I'm pretty old now. No. I was born in Leesburg in the county hospital in the colored wing. My mother and father from West Virginia, the Appalachian Mountains. I was born there, and I lived in Virginia until I was about first grade, beginning of the second grade. I have two sisters, two up and two down, four altogether. My mother and father separated when I was about, I don't know, eight or something, seven or eight. And he remarried about 20 years later, but him and the lady was together all those years. She had gotten to some kind of fight or something, and her sister shot her, and she got hit in the spine, and she was paralyzed from the waist down. But she had two children even after that incident. And my father was a deacon in the church. My uncle was a minister. My auntie was a minister. My grandfather was a deacon in the church. And my mom, her real dad, my grandfather, he had joined the army when he was young, and he was trying to make a career out of it. So he went missing in action, I think, when she was young. Anyway, my grandmother, she had debilitating problems. She was born with arthritis, the kind that bend your bones and, you know, make them, you know, enlarged and whatever, and she would have trouble walking and stuff sometimes. But it's tremendously painful, and I often wonder how she endured all those days and nights with pain constantly. Because back then, the only thing you could take was Anacin. And my mother was a go-getter. She got up out there in West Virginia Hills and came on down to D.C. And she got a job in Virginia, Falls Church, working in a dry cleaners. My mother was a workaholic. She worked 6 days a week, her whole lifetime. I don't think she ever took any days off, was sick. And when she had to go to school with any one of us, it would be a hour meeting or something like that. And then she went on back to work. She was young, and I didn't realize that either. Because, like, she had three children by the time she was 18. So I have two sisters that's older than me. But you don't look at your mom and think, oh, she's just a young girl. You be thinking, that's my mom and she's an old lady. But she was very sweet. She was very strict. She didn't play no games. And she play on your heart. Sometimes it would be better for her to go ahead and beat you than to giving you lectures and she all into punishment. She's always done, you can't do this, or you can't do that, or you can't go out, or stuff like that. And it really didn't work on me because she would get home at 7 o'clock and she was like clockwork. And when I seen the little Corvette come around the corner, boom, I run in the house, you know. Okay, I seen you. You got another month. You're on punishment. You can't go out. We lived on the first floor. She went to sleep every night like clockwork. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, boom, she was out for the count. And I was out the window. And, I got away with a lot of things because it really was nobody but my oldest sister that chastised me. And my mother was working so much all the time. Because my mother never was on no welfare or handout or nothing. And she cursed my father dearly because she said he wasn't no good because he was always coming up short with funds. And, but that's how she was a strong, independent woman. And I guess her coming up made her that way. You know, she had, you know, kind of hard life, you know. And no running water, outhouse. But we weren't unique because there was a whole lot of people growing up in that time that did in Virginia that didn't have running water and had an outhouse. But fortunately, I didn't have to go through that. And I think that's more or less was giving her inspiration to try to better our life and to do things, you know, to make our life better. And I never could understand how people could forego things or sacrifice themselves for the happiness of other people. And, you know, it really took me, it's hard to understand that. Anyway, I got away with a lot of things, but sometime my mother would cry. She would say, oh, baby, I don't want to see you messed up. I don't want to. And that would make me feel worse than if she, because when she beat you, she would really get that butt. And one time when I was hooking school, it was so funny. I was just telling them about it this morning. Me and my friend Jackie, right, we decided we was going to hook school. See, in Maryland, we had to catch the school bus. And they come and pick you up at 8:30, I think it was. And we wait until the school bus left, and then we go off and do our thing. So we was in the phone booth trying to make connections of where we was going to go and hang out for that day. And my mother pulled right up in front of the phone booth. And here go my friend Jackie talking about duck, duck. How you going to duck in a phone booth? It's see-through, you know? That was really crazy. So my mother said, that's all right. You go home. I'll be there. And she went up and she talked to the girl's mother and told her what happened. And we both were punished for a month or something like that. Like after school, they always had recreational things sponsored by the school, you know, where you could go and play games and they still have that, I guess. I don't know. But you could go and play games, hang out, kickball, you know, table tennis and ping pong, stuff like that, and Monopoly and stuff. And it was an adult there to guide you. But I kind of outgrew that, you know, around about the seventh grade. I decided I was going to go venturously. So we would, one time we walked all the way from southeast to northwest just to hang out and so, meet boys.
So Jackie, can you tell me some of your best memories from your childhood?
Ooh, so many things. By me coming from the country, when I lived in the country, we lived in a big old house on a hill. And it was, the nearest neighbor was like a mile away. And I could climb the tree and look over the valley and see nothing but trees and grass. But when I came to D.C., they had streetlights. They had running water. They had all these amenities. So everything was exciting to me. And as I got older, I wanted to be Uber Fly. So I wanted to wear all the fly clothes and do all the, you know, cool things. And my friend taught me how to smoke cigarettes and how to inhale. And you're supposed to breathe it in and hold it for a minute and say a couple of people's names and blow it out. Thanks a lot, Janice. And I learned how to smoke. Then I graduated to wine, drinking that Wild Irish Rose. And we had a swimming pool, right, in the back where we, in the building that we lived in. And because we lived in garden apartments in Southeast, though, but it wasn't like it is now. I drank that wine and got laid out in back by the pool. And my friends say, oh, that Corvette is coming around the corner, your mother's home. Oh, but I couldn't even move. So my sister, she comes out there. They drag me in the bathroom and put me in the water in the shower, you know, trying to sober me up. But my mom was no fool. She said, what's wrong with that girl? And everybody told me, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with her. We found outside, I think she's just sleepy. She said, come here, girl. That ain't no sleep. You smell like liquor or something. I think she drunk. Oh, my God, the child is drunk. Seventh grade, and she drunk already. I know you just ain't going to amount to nothing. What is wrong with you? I work like a dog, blah, 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 blah. You can't go out for none of the summer. And them girls you've been hanging with, you got to leave them alone. Because my mother ain't home no thing. She call them bad names. Those are not the kind of people that are your friends. Because if they was your friends, y'all wouldn't be doing that kind of simple stuff. Okay. So now I'm punished. I learned how to drink and how to smoke. Now, we got to get sexy on them, okay? We going to hook school. We're going to hook up with some boys. And we're going to be in my house. And we're going to try to do it, okay? And my neighbor upstairs said, I heard y'all down here. She knocked on the door. She said, Jackie, you got boys up in there? Me, Janice, and Phyllis. They were two sisters. They were my best friend. We had some boys up in there, call ourselves being grown. She said, get them niggas out of there, and I'm going to tell your mother as soon as she come home. Okay. But that was fun because it was growing up, you know?
So this is when you were in D.C., right?
Yeah, all this time.
So what part of the city did you grow up in the city?
Well, we lived right on the Maryland line. Okay. But I used to hang in Southeast, Northeast, Northwest, because they had the go-go's up Northwest. But they had the go-go's at the Catholic Church in Southeast. Wherever the action was, baby, I was on the scene. So I thought I was cool, right? So I used to go to the Catholic casino nights, and they would have go-go's. And they would have bands like EU Freeze and what's that man name? You know, one invented the go-go.
Oh, you talking about Chuck?
Chuck Jones.
Chuck something. What's his name?
Oh, my goodness. How are we going to forget that name? He was a superstar.
Chuck Brown, Chuck something.
Yeah, Chuck Brown. He was a superstar. EU Freeze and all them kind of people, you know. Wherever they was, we was. Mm-hmm. And then they had down from the hotel in Northwest where Hinckley shot at the president, they had an underground type go-go. And they was playing music, but they was playing all the better music. And I was traveling, girl, me and my friend used to take the train and go to New York on the weekend to see my grandfather. I'm serious. And they would have house parties. And girl, my eyes would be bigger than saucers because everything was uber exciting and all the guys were dressed all slicked up with three-piece down and gaiters on, you know, with the doves. And they ain't no more than 18 they sell. And I'm like 13. And I was like, ooh-wee, poop-poopy-doo, you know. Oh, look at that, look at that. And that's what I learned. I remember the bump came out. We had went to New York, and we went to this house party. And they had a garden in the back, and everybody was doing the bump. And, ooh, that was so exciting. So when we came back to D.C., it didn't get to D.C. until almost the next year. But me and Terry already knew how to do it because we had went up there and learned then. I used to get, well, I ain't even gonna lie. When my mother went to sleep at 7:30, her usual time, 8 o'clock, I would get the keys to the car. She used to have a little white Camaro. I used to get the keys to the car, and I get in the car, and Fridays I go to the go-go, and I mean, I'd be all, and I didn't even know how to drive. Well, I knew how to drive, and I had no license, plus I was too young. And she would go with me, you know, because I got that from my sister. My sister used to steal her father's car, but he had a stick shift. My mother had an automatic. We get in that stick shift, and she tear all the gears out. And I'd be sitting in the front seat. Go, Diane, go. Where we going at, baby? I don't know. Ride me till I sweat. Boom, boom, boom. Shifting all the gears. And her father said, girl, you done tore out every gear in my car. Where would you think you was going? We was going to the go-go. Okay. I mean, we had a lot of fun. I don't know what they did. Then I turned uber militant, and my mother said, if something was wrong, she said, I'm black struck or something, because I thought everything with black was good. I love dark-skinned men. Child, please. And in Virginia, it was a mixed school, so I don't know where I get that hatred from. But they did show prejudice when I was a child. Because I remember we had to go to the back door to some stores and stuff. And, you know, the adults try to hush it up and make it like it was a normal thing or whatever. But I don't know. I got to hang with the people in D.C. and they was just like super slick and talking philosophy. Mm-hmm. Philosophy in the eighth grade. I loved
it. Talking about you and how some of the great things you've done as a teenager, can you tell me what changes have you seen happen in the year of 2022 versus where you grew up and in the city as a whole?
Oh, a whole lot. I grew up in Oxon Hill and Marlow Heights, but I always went to D.C. And a lot of people come to D.C., they say, or the suburban people come to D.C. to do their dirt. But not necessarily. They just had more things to do. They didn't have no teen clubs in Oxon Hill or Marlow Heights or anything like that. And now, you know, it changed a lot because they started getting gangs and people started getting, you know, there was drugs around because, like, during the Vietnam War, a lot of people came back drug addicts, and it was slowly but surely creeping into, you know, neighborhoods and stuff, but it wasn't exposed like it is. And then they kind of started coming out with that animal tranquilizers or whatever that stuff is.
Yeah.
Love Boat. And that was setting a lot of people crazy. And then the architecture changed somewhat, too. Well, in the neighborhoods, the people, if you did something, I ain't going to tell that superficial lie that everybody was cool in the gang and if they caught you, that they would beat you. And then you tell your mother and she beat you too. Because my mother didn't play that game. You don't be hitting on her children. But she did appreciate people coming telling her. And they did keep an eye out, and they didn't have no problem talking about it. So that's what made it safe. And nobody wants to see a child hurt. But nowadays, the parents want to get out in the street and fight with the kids. They go to school and argue with the teacher because the teacher said the child did something, or they want to fight with the child that was fighting their child. And I don't know, they displace people. The projects, they got closed down on Knox projects. They build up houses, Woodland Terrace. They build up houses, bird farms. They've been threatening to shut that down for the longest, but they did build up some new houses. They had a lot of projects and government houses in D.C., and they tore them down and remodeled. And because it was a thing, they said the rats were so big in Knox projects that they chased the cats and beat up the dogs. That's how big they was. But we had no problems going up there and hanging out with people eating hot dogs and drinking Kool-Aid, okay? As we used to call it, kicking the bobo. And that was a lot of fun. The architecture changed. The people's attitude changed. And it just looks different as a city than it was in the 60s and 70s. Some people say it's improved, but I say it got really crowded. And, everything went up. They got high rises everywhere. They had some projects right down here off of M Street. Because I know all the projects I used to go around to.
Are there any restaurants that back in the 60s and 70s that you really liked the most and you miss? Or are they still there? Mm.
They had this little carryout by Spingarn. They called Sporty's. And everybody used to love to go to Sporty's. And it was like a little thing. But everybody used to come all the way from the Southeast to go over Northeast to go get ice cream and cheeseburgers from Sporty's. That was kind of wild, but they was good. Or maybe it was just a fad. Somebody caught on and everybody started liking it and everybody started going there. That's gone. That's been gone. Oh, man, this is something unique to D.C. They had this shop called Mile Long where you could get Subway sandwiches, but they wasn't cold cut. You could get a Mile Long cheeseburger, a mile-long steak and cheese, a mile-long ham sandwich, or whatever. And it was like a 12 inches or more sub sandwich with like three burgers on it with cheese, lettuce, tomatoes on. I think back then it was like $2 or $2.50 or something like that. We would cut that bad boy in half and the party was on. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We used to take in the elementary, we used to take us, because I did go to Monroe Elementary, because we moved a lot too. My mother had a house on Irvin Street, and we used to take pennies and file them down to the shape of dimes all day long to put them in the soda machine to get sodas. That was big fun to me back then. And all day long there, just to get one soda, out there on the sidewalk, filing them down. Occupy your time, I tell you. I don't know. But so, to me, I don't know if anybody else grew up with all that excitement and stuff. But And then as I got older and then I got married for the second time, that's when I moved to New York, and that was supposed to be in the big city, but to me it was just trash. It didn't have, it was a lot of people in D.C. that came up from the South, and they was neat people. They kept their apartments and their houses neat. Even in the projects, they had gardens and stuff. None of that's going on. They tore down mostly all the projects, put up high rises, separate the people, and start pumping the drugs and bad publicity. Don't go to Southeast. Don't go to Southeast. Don't go to Northwest. DC's for dogs. Chocolate City, Boo Boo City, and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, I don't know what kind of DC y'all talking about, because it wasn't like that when I was there. But even my own daughter called me in New York and said, Mommy, you ain't missed nothing in DC. You don't even want to go there no more. Because she went to school in DC. She said, even the mayor's on crack. And I said, get out of here.
So, Jackie, I want to ask you about your experience with Street Sense Media. How and when did you first hear about Street Sense?
Oh, my husband, my second husband, Mr. Turner was selling Street Sense a couple of years before me. And I had three jobs. I worked for the Nationals as a ticket taker. I worked for a security company at the games. So the days that I had off from the ticket, because we didn't work every day, and they have games, you know, sometimes 7 days a week. The days that I didn't have to, you know, take tickets, I would sign up and do security. And then in the morning time, I had this job working for the construction union, and it was like a continuous protest against unfair labor practices. And my sister them laughed, she don't know where I find these jobs. We marched around in circles. That rat gotta go, they pay low. That rat gotta go. And she like, how much they pay you? But they was paying minimum wages. I think we was like $7 an hour, $7.50. But it was only 4 hours a day. But that leave me time to do those other jobs. And I lost one job, I think. And then I got tired of others because I worked in for 5 years. So somebody said, go to NCBA. So I went there and I worked for them. And they was paying pretty good money, though. They started out like $8.50 or something like that. And when I left there, they was paying $15-something. But it was a two-year program. And I was well extended past there because I worked there for 5 years. So now I don't have no job, and I'm collecting unemployment. So he said, why don't you go down Street Sense? And I say, picture me standing on a corner talking about Street Sense. He said, picture me, I do it every day. I said, okay, maybe I'll try it. And I did. It didn't work out at first. It took me a while to learn what to say and find the traffic where I was able to sell. And sometimes I would work from sun up until sundown. Sometimes I would be downtown at, 8 o'clock in the morning and wouldn't go home until 9 o'clock. Still selling Street Sense. But as time went on, I got better and better. And on Fridays, I used to make $100 a day. But I worked for that, every bit of that. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know. I don't make a whole lot of money, but I average about $50 a day. But it's a constant thing, and you got to find the money. Like my grandbaby said, got to search for that money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I learned a lot of things for 3 cents. Mm-hmm. Oh, they had those classes and self-defense.
So, Jackie, how has working with Street Sense Media impacted your life?
They made me be more open-minded.
Like, you know, has it changed your life? Has it make your life more vibrant or less vibrant? Or has it done?
No, it made me open my eyes and not to be prejudicial or be judgmental, mm-hmm. because there's all kinds of people in the world. Mm-hmm. And when I first started out, certain people I would just ignore and just assume that it was something wrong with them. I never thought about checking my heart to see, well, what kind of person don't have no humanity. Mm-hmm. But then I got involved and a lot of things was really getting to me. I was like, what is the matter with these people? Don't they understand? And my husband said, don't you understand that some people have issues, their mental issues, and it's not their fault. They need help. And I was like, oh, okay. But I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But not only helping them and how to deal with them, how to check myself mm-hmm. and how to deal with my inner feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I to judge somebody else? Plus, I got more in the church. But they have, you know, they got all kinds of things here. They used to have mm-hmm. all kinds of classes, self-esteem classes, yoga classes, all kinds of classes. So I've gotten a lot from Street Sense, and it has benefited my life by making me know that I am the leader of me. And I can do what I want to do when I want to do it. And if I don't want to, don't do it.
So how is Street Sense Media important to you right now, today?
It's a way of me getting finance and when I want or how I want. If I don't want to work, I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
If I need money, I can get out and grind and get it. And that's about it. And I learned things like from their writing class
mm-hmm.
and their poetry class. Those things, you know, has helped me, you know, learn how to spell and structure sentence better. And basic things that I probably should have learned a long time ago, but I was busy having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
I want to talk about, have you ever been homeless, ever, in your lifetime?
Yeah, I became homeless because I ran away and left my husband.
Mm.
But it was a planned thing.
Okay.
I called Calvary Women's Shelter, and you had to get on a waiting list because I was plotting my getaway. And, I waited until they had an opening, and I packed what I could and left. I was living with my husband and his mother in Capitol Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go back. I had a kind of bad marriage.
Okay, so was it more like a domestic abuse or toxic
no,
between your
mother-in-law?
No,
it was battered woman syndrome.
Hmm?
Battered woman syndrome.
Okay. So
he didn't beat me.
But it was a toxic relationship.
Yes, because he was overpowering me mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basic things that people take for granted. If somebody constantly putting you down, after a while, you're going to feel inferior. I mean, it's just a fact.
So I want to ask you, since, you know, you went through this syndrome of toxic relationship with your mother-in-law and your husband. What do you want people to know about your story that you think is often misunderstood, how women become homeless
Because it's not always have to be based
well,
on...
Well, it's not just women, because that can be on the other shoe, too.
Yeah, I'm
but
sure
the thing
it is
that I know that in Washington, D.C., there's a hotline to help. But people that are in these situations, they don't know or they're afraid to reach out. I was married for 32 years. And majority of those years, it wasn't working. But I didn't have the nerve to leave. And when I finally did get up the nerve, and I went to a shelter, and I talked with the counselors and stuff there, I started seeing solutions. I could save money. I could... do what I want, when I want. I didn't need nobody's permission. I could work on the things that make me happy. And to realize, hey, it's not normal for somebody to be talking to you bad all the time and you not say anything.
Exactly. I agree.
And I've seen men that they don't want to do anything because they think they can't do anything. And I'm saying, don't be afraid to ask somebody, or if you reach out, people will reach out to you. And I know that that's what's happening right now. You know, ask somebody, like if you ask somebody at the street saying, hey, look, I'm having some issues. Maybe not the people, the vendors, but the staff, they know places you can go and where you can seek out help and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's important, especially when people don't have nowhere or nothing. My parents, my mother was living in Silver Spring. My father died. And my sisters and them, they was way out in Bowie and Germantown, and they ain't know what was going on in my household, you know? And that's how they work. They get you alone. And they start taking over. And you can get out of those situations, mm-hmm. but you have to know where to go and how to use the system to your benefit. You can't start stuff and then say, well, I'm going to do this part, but I'm not going to do that part. Because you got to accept it for what it is. If they say you got to be in there at 7 o'clock, and you ain't got no job, and you ain't got nothing better to do, why you can't be in there, you know? But people, a lot of people did, just can't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
They told me I had to pick one or the other, either alcohol or drug. But I had to go to some kind of meetings. So I tried, went to both of them. But the drug thing, it just, to me, it was a waste of time. And the alcohol thing was right next door, and I could get that in, you know, before I went to work in the morning. And so I went there. They have, and they got the house of roof with people with families. And in D.C., if you laid out on the street, all you gotta do is, but some people don't want to be either. They don't want to be deal with nobody in their life bothering them. Maybe they done had so much of that in their life that they feel like, hey, I don't want to be bothered with that no more. I'm just gonna work it out. Good luck to them. That's all I can say. It just so happened that it worked out for me, but it didn't have to. Maybe I was a grace of God. I put a lot of emphasis on God because I think religion has helped me too.
So, Jackie, what changes would you like to see made in terms of addressing homelessness as an issue at the governmental level?
Yeah, I speak on that, but people don't like the way I feel. I feel like, if society has gotten you down to the point where you got to be, now, don't get me wrong. When I was in New York, there was times that I left my husband and had nowhere to go and no family. And I have spent the night in the subway, laying on the benches. But I always went back because I couldn't deal with that kind of lifestyle. But if life has gotten you down to that point where you ain't got nowhere to go and you outside, you have issues. If your preference is to lay in the street, that's my opinion. I don't think those people need protection from one another. I think they need rescuing and help. Now, they got this, like this morning, they had the shelter bus to come up and blow the horn, but they didn't get out and ask the campers, did they want to go and get breakfast and, you know, come to, you know, a shelter? Because they have, you know, when it rains especially or bad weather or something, they got a bus they ride around to try to pick up people, anybody they want. But like I say, it's got to be something that you want to do. They need rescuing. They need help. Some people get confused to the point they don't know, you know, what to do. And I have gotten to that point. One time, I was so confused that I didn't want to take a bath. And well, luckily, I caught myself. But things can happen to you, and it's a shock syndrome, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And you in shock, but don't know that you in shock. My husband one morning got up and said, "You are no earthly good." And I cried all day long. Why? I don't know. But that thing hurt me to my heart. And I just cried and cried. And one time, I met this guy, and I kissed the guy. And I broke out in hives. And I called my sister. I said, "Oh, my God, I broke out in hives. He going to know that I kissed somebody? I know he's just going to look at me and tell." And my sister said, "You really crazy, girl. How you go?" But you never know the person's state of mind. Honest to God, I broke out in hives. And I had convinced myself that Carl could look at me and tell that I kissed somebody else. That's sad, ain't it?
No, it's normal.
So I don't think they need protection. I think they need rescuing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think need to be changed up. Don't give them free license to ruin themselves. Help them. Rescue them. Let them know that people care. And I know it takes a strong person. Me, all hails to the psychiatrist. That lady, the therapist that I seen from the House of Ruth, they volunteer. And I seen that lady for 2 years. She never gave me any negative feedback. She was patient. And she let me say what I want to say. She would interject little questions and give me things to think about. And all of a sudden, something just clicked. And I said to myself, I don't have to live like this. The hell with that man. But only I didn't call him no man. I had some other choice words for him. And I say, I'm gone. And that's when I left.
Mm. Well, thank you, Jackie, for this wonderful interview.
Yeah, I exposed myself, but I just want people to know that they can get help. And I just want people to know that everybody could get homeless. All you can do is lose your job, and that's it. Yep. And get behind in your rent. And you outie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me share this with you.
Thank you very much. It was a lovely story.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dan.